Good morning. I would like to welcome everyone to the Report on Public Finance and Public Department Second Quarter 2012. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded for replay. I would now like to turn the call over to Miguel Masfacher. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Mexican Ministry of Finance conference call on the public finance and public debt results as of the first semester of 2012. Just to remind our friends from the press that this call is off the record. As usual, I'll make some very brief remarks on economic activity and public finances, and then Alejandro Diaz de León, who is here with me, will make some comments about the recent evolution of public debt. On the economic outlook in general, the results that we have observed during the second quarter of 2012 have been quite favorable. They do suggest that some deceleration is taking place with respect to the very strong results that we observed in the first quarter. But nevertheless, the expansion of the Mexican economy continues to proceed and to proceed at a relatively strong pace. In particular, our expectation for annual growth in the second quarter of the year is growth of close to 4% in annual terms. This would imply something like 0.8% in quarterly terms, or if you were to annualize it, about 3.2%. Which does imply some degree of deceleration with respect to, as I mentioned, the results in the first quarter, but which nevertheless is a growth that is a double or more than double growth that is being observed in the U.S., which has actually been the pattern that we have been observing during the last 3 years. When you look at the detail, and in order to give you some more information with respect to what we have in our bulletin and the quarterly report, there we report all the data from the point of view of annual growth. I'll just be mentioning some of the numbers, but looking more and focusing more on the marginal changes, the seasonally adjusted quarterly changes. If you look actually at the growth of manufacturing exports and looking first at the components of demand and then production, growth during the second quarter, this is quarter-to-quarter non-annualized growth of manufacturing exports, it was 2.4%, which is a pretty strong result. From the point of view of consumption, and that sales actually grew by 2.9%. Investment, we only have the data for April. April was a pretty strong month with a month-to-month growth rate, non-annualized, of 1.9%. That's probably too strong to be sustained, but nevertheless, it shows that dynamism in investment has been relatively strong. Moving to the results from the point of view of production, here the comparison is not for the full quarter, it's really a growth that was observed in the period April-May compared to what was observed in the period February-March. And if you look at the growth rate of IGAE in sort of this bi-monthly period, again non-annualized, the growth rate was 1.1%. In industrial production, it was 0.7%, and in services, it was 1.7%. From the point of view of employment, there we do have the numbers for the full quarter, and the quarterly growth rate non-annualized implies an expansion in formal sector employment of 1.2%. So in general, the results, both from the point of view of demand, from the point of view of production, and of employment during the second quarter of the year, have been quite favorable. We did have somewhat of a spike in inflation during the second quarter of the year. General inflation was 4.3%, but core inflation remained at a level of 3.5%. A lot of the deviation that we observed in inflation was associated with weather-related shocks in foodstuffs at this moment, having a general effect on core inflation. The Mexican stock market had, in relative terms, a very good performance during the second quarter of the year with an increase of 1.7% compared with a decrease in most other both industrial and emerging markets. And the peso had a slight depreciation from 12.8% on the 30th of March in 2012 to 13.3% at the end of June. Credit continues to expand at a pretty fast pace. In general, credit by commercial banks to commercial and development banks to the private sector registered an increase of somewhat more than 10% in real annual terms. And when you look at the components within credit, both credit to consumption, housing, and to firms and individuals with entrepreneurial activities, growth rates remained relatively high. Going very quickly to the results of public finances, in the first half of 2012, the public balance had a deficit of 143 billion pesos. If you exclude Pemex's investment, the public balance had a deficit of 24 billion pesos. The primary balance posted a surplus of 23 billion pesos. The results are basically consistent with what we have approved by Congress for the year as a whole. Some people have made a comment, and the press has made a little bit the comment, that the deficit is higher for the first semester of the year than what was observed at the same period of last year, even though the level of the deficit approved for 2012 is smaller than that approved for 2011. The explanation there basically has to do with a much better execution of expenditures. Normally, what you observe in years when you actually have elections and transition is that expenditures tend to, the calendar of expenditures tends to move forward with respect with what you observe in a typical year. One explanation for that is obviously the expenditure that you observe associated with the electoral process. Another part is that a lot of the ministries want to finish their projects before the change in government, so they actually try to accelerate their spending during the year. But nevertheless, we would expect that for the year as a whole, we should be finishing with a level of the deficit that is perfectly consistent with what was approved by Congress. Looking at the results from the point of view of revenues, in the first semester of the year, revenues are increasing 9% in real annual terms, a pretty strong result. Oil revenues are increasing by 12% in real annual terms, basically due to higher prices for Mexican oil exports and to some degree the depreciation that we observed in the peso. Non-oil tax revenues increased by 2.5% in real annual terms. However, it's important to note that a factor that explains this relatively modest growth rate is the elimination of the vehicle ownership tax, which was approved for this year. If you take that effect away, actually, non-oil tax revenues increased by 4% in real terms. VAT is increasing 5.5%, a pretty strong result, even though the Buen Fin discount program, which was adopted in November of last year, actually led to lower revenues in January of this year than was anticipated. So the performance in VAT controlling for that is actually even slightly stronger. The income tax, the combination of the income tax, YETO, and the tax on cash deposits, that grew by 2.7%. The relatively weak performance there has to do with the fact that for the personal income tax, people for the first time were allowed to deduct some of the spending that they do on schooling. If you were to control for that, you would again observe an increase for the combination of the income tax, YETO, and the cash on tax deposits of close to 4%, very similar to the growth rate of the economy. So in general, all the results from the point of view of tax revenues are pretty positive. Revenues of public entities different from Pemex are increasing 10.5%, and non-tax revenues of the federal government are increasing by almost 60% due to some non-recurrent revenues that we observed, some relatively high non-recurrent revenues that we observed in the first semester of the year. When you compare the results on revenues with respect to those in the program, that is, in order to try to identify whether we're having a windfall in revenues and whether these revenues are higher than what was originally anticipated. Sorry. The comparison with respect to the program shows that revenues are higher than the program by 96 billion pesos. And this is due to higher revenues in all the different components. We have, of these 96 billion pesos, 20 billion are coming from oil revenues above program, about 10 billion pesos from non-oil tax revenues above program, 14 billion from public sector entities, different from Pemex being above program, and then finally 52 billion from non-oil, non-tax revenues also being above program. This very large number for non-oil, non-tax revenues is basically associated with some non-recurrent revenues, which we were originally anticipating we would be receiving in the second half of the year. So obviously, once we look at the year as a whole, it might be the case that we don't have such a large number of windfall revenues or revenues above program for non-oil, non-tax revenues. But nevertheless, the results do suggest that we should not have any problems from the point of view of being able to meet all our objectives from the point of view of revenues and for the fiscal results as a whole. Going very quickly over expenditures, total public sector expenditures increased by 8.8% in real annual terms, and programmable expenditures increased by 10.8% in real annual terms. This very strong pattern of growth is basically explained by sort of these dynamics that I mentioned you typically observe in the last year of an administration. When you look at the results within expenditures, those on economic and social development increased by 11.8% in real terms. Physical budgetary investment increased by 13% and foster investment by 10.5%. Federal resources transfers to state and municipalities increased by 6%. Within shared revenues show a relatively low rate of growth of only 0.1%. They're basically the same as last year in real terms. But again, this is due to the elimination of the vehicle ownership tax. If you were to control the base of comparison for that effect, you would be observing an increase in shared revenues of 4.6%, consistent with the strong performance that we're observing in both oil and non-oil tax revenues. Pensions and retirement expenditures increased by 6.2%, and finally, the financial cost of the public sector increased by 10.3% in real annual terms. The relatively strong growth that we observe there is basically due to two effects. The first one is the effect of the exchange rate depreciation. A second one is due to some changes in the seasonality of the debt service of Pemex, which is leading to an increase in financial cost in Pemex compared with what was observed last year, but we're expecting that to be normalized as the year progresses. With that, I would finish my initial comments and pass over to Alejandro Díaz de León.
Thank you, Miguel. Just going into the public debt, first the strategy. During the second quarter, we continued the implementation of our annual borrowing plan, satisfying the funding needs of the federal government mainly through the local debt market and maintaining ample access to international financial markets. On the domestic side, I would highlight that the average maturity and duration of the marginal gross issuance we did in the second quarter was 12.7 and 7.06 years, respectively. And I would highlight that these figures are significantly larger than what we had, for example, at the closing of last year, which was 10.7 and 6.6 years, respectively. With this, the total average maturity of domestic debt is 7.8 years, and the duration of the total domestic debt is 4.8 years. As we have mentioned in previous calls, foreign investors' participation in the Mexican government local bonds has been strong, and right now they hold 30% of the total domestic debt issuance at the end of June. And going to the external debt, I would just highlight a transaction that we did in yen. We basically went back to the yen market for the first time without any guarantee for more than 10 years, and it was the first issuance for our similar rating in prior to the crisis. So it was a significant transaction with regaining access in the Japanese market. Regarding the debt levels, I would give you the three basic figures that we provide, which is the federal government debt as a share of GDP, which is 27.4%, Of this figure, 20%, 21% is external financing, and 79% is done domestically. And regarding the public sector net debt, which, as you know, it includes both the federal government and also public entities under direct budgetary control and development banks, this figure reached 33.6% of GDP. And regarding, as you know, our broadest definition, which is the historical balance of the public sector borrowing requirement, these amounted for 37.13% of GDP. This is the most important figures regarding debt, and we are ready to take some questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one to ask a question. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star, then the number one to ask a question at this time. We do have a question from the line of Luis Arcentales with Morgan Stanley.
Thank you for the call, guys. Miguel, could you remind us how the budgeting timeline changes this year because of the administration change, if you don't mind? I think you don't follow the mid-November and late October deadlines, right?
That's exactly right, Luis. Normally, the timeline changes in an important way. So the Constitution establishes that the current team in Hacienda has to actually work with a transition team, and we actually have to prepare a preliminary budget before that before the new administration comes in. But in the end, the budget is theirs. So we provide them all of the technical support that they actually want, and we do give them a full proposal before they come into power. But in the end, they can make any adjustments that they want, and it's actually their budget, and they present it. So the calendar that there exists for the presentation of the budget by the new administration is from the 1st of December, when they assume power, until the 15th. So they have these 2 weeks, and at any point during these 2 weeks, the new administration can send the budget to Congress. Given the very short timeline that you have, you don't have the same periods or the same explicit periods for the approval of the income law in the lower and upper house and then expenditure decree in the lower house. But everything has to be approved by the 31st of December. So it's a very tight time period. Hopefully the new administration will be able to present the final budget early in December, so that they make sure that the approval process is an orderly one, and they are able to have everything approved even before the 31st. But the calendar tightens very significantly. I hope that was clear.
Yeah, crystal clear. Thank you. Miguel, just on a separate issue, there are several programs that you approve the budget and go through the Agriculture Secretary to support, as you know, producers and protect consumers from some of the price hikes on grains. Do you foresee any changes to that? How is this current environment of grain, high grain prices affecting the thinking on that front or the programs?
Actually, we made an announcement yesterday for a new program that will going to be worked by FIRA and by the Mexican Stock Exchange and sort of in general with some support from commercial banks. And the basic idea is that the Mexican Stock Exchange will start to develop smaller contracts very tightly linked to futures contracts in the Chicago Board of Trade, but where basically they will be of a much smaller magnitude. That's a But these are more new programs, and our development banks that have to do with the agricultural sector, together with the Ministry of Agriculture, will actually be promoting the use of these smaller contracts. As of now, you already have some hedging programs, but they used to depend somewhat on budgetary resources allocated for these purposes. Through these new programs, actually, any type of producer can come at any point in time to actually get any type of hedge that they want. So in general, we're trying to make that more flexible. Now, from the point of view of, I guess your question is related to some degree to sort of the problems in the drought in the U.S. and perhaps the issues with other grains in some other parts in the world, like Russia. And in that respect, I mean, it's not impossible, but we might be observing some marginal additional pressures from the point of view of grain prices. We also have, to some extent, the issue of the influenza that is affecting chicken. So I think it's not unthinkable that we would be observing additional pressures in agricultural prices during the forthcoming months, though clearly all of these seem to be sort of one-time temporary shocks that in principle should dissipate when you return to more regular weather patterns and to and sort of the influenza episode finishes. So we might observe, so I mean, I'm giving you a very roundabout response to your question, but I mean, my impression is that we could continue to observe some additional inflationary pressures associated with foodstuff prices, both because of domestic and external shocks. But in principle, they should be dissipating towards the end of the year when you start to observe some of these, the effects of some of these shocks to start dissipating.
Thanks a lot, Miguel.
You're welcome.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And again, that's star one to ask a question. And I'm showing that there are no further questions in the queue at this time.
Thank you very much, operator. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the call. And as you know, we're always available for any additional questions or issues that you might have, both at the Investor Relations Office and at the Public Credit Unit. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This does conclude today's report on public finance and public debt second quarter 2012 conference call. You may now disconnect.